This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Today's podcast is sponsored by The Morning Navigator, a daily newsletter written by Tony Greer, who is a 30-year veteran trader in the financial markets. I think it's important to be responsible with your personal finances and investments, and it's hard to do that without understanding the markets. Now, this is where The Morning Navigator fills a specific need for me. If you're looking for actionable trade ideas or simply to educate yourself about the markets, then The Morning Navigator will help you to do both. It's an interesting, informative, and amusing daily read. Now, a subscription to The Morning Navigator normally costs $60 a month or $650 per year. However, my listeners can go to tgmacro.com, sign up for a free one-week trial, and apply the code ZUBY, Z-U-B-Y, at checkout for a discount of either $10 off the $60 a month subscription or $100 off the $650 annual subscription. As you can infer, the annual subscription is a better deal. Either one is a win when it comes to understanding the global markets and managing your personal investments. So once again, you can sign up today for a free trial at tgmacro.com. tgmacro.com. Go check it out.
I am the man, sick with the slang, sick and I'm destined for fame. Do for the fam, not for the gram, stunting you're destined for pain. I do not front, I do not scam, put some respect on my name.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world? I would like to welcome you back to another episode of Real Talk with Zuby. Now, on today's episode, we have got on an author, a public speaker, the author of Zen Your Workplace, and the founder and owner of the company Workplace Zen. And this is Carlin Borisenko. Welcome to the show.
And thank you for having me, Zuby. I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. It's a great opportunity. So I've done a really, really brief intro right there, but why don't you tell people a little bit more about who you are and what you do to begin with?
Yeah, so I'm an organizational psychologist. I work with individuals and organizations all over the world just to help make work better, reduce people's stress, help them apply different mindfulness strategies at work just to create a better, more empowering experience. But how most people know me as of the last week anyway is I was a former Democrat who went to a Trump rally and wrote an article about it.
Okay, there's a lot to get into right there. And
yes,
I think we were already following each other before yeah. This thing blew up, and we'd mm-hmm. had a couple of interactions online. I don't know how we came to follow each other, but you know, mm-hmm. I know we chatted a little bit. But you've had this story that you posted on Medium. So essentially a blog post. I think it's been viewed over 3 million times now.
Yeah, it's insane in the last week.
Okay. And this was about you going to a Trump rally. So I will link the article in the show notes, but can you just talk us through what you wrote in the article? Why? Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about your own political background and story, and then what prompted you to go to a Trump rally. So just talk us through it.
Okay, so dig in, because it's a little bit of a story, because we have to go back. So I've been a Democrat for 20 years, since I was 18 years old. I've never voted for anyone that was not a Democrat in my life, except for Bernie Sanders, because Bernie Sanders is not technically a Democrat. He's who I voted for in 2016. And then I kind of plugged my nose and voted for Hillary, even though I really didn't want to, because I thought Trump was evil. Okay. And so just kind of fast forward a couple years. So I'm a knitter. And people might not, you know, understand this or you know, be surprised by this, but the online knitting community is a hyper political world. And mm-hmm. about a year ago, we started having these like roving gangs of social justice warriors just looking for opportunities to call people out on for minor infractions. Like one person got called out because she wrote a blog post about being excited about going on a trip to India, and they were like, "You're othering them." And another one got called out because she said, "I'm not comfortable with the bullying. I'm leaving Instagram." And another guy got called out because he posted a poem asking for kindness. And it's just, it's escalated. And I wasn't really paying attention to all of this social justice stuff before that, but I was paying attention to knitting. Okay. And when I saw that, I kind of, I thought, you know, this is crazy. This is, I am not comfortable with this. And, you know, these were people who I've always considered myself a liberal, though not necessarily progressive. I've always been pretty centrist. And I saw how these people were behaving. And I was like, I don't want to align myself with these people. They're out of their minds. They're insane. And so I kind of started challenging myself to look outside my echo chamber, because I had been existing in very much like a liberal bubble. I was watching a lot of MSNBC. I had unfriended a lot of people that voted for Trump, so I didn't even have to see them. Like, I was convinced that like every Trump supporter was like a racist. I mean, I was very angry for a while. Sure. I lost my zen for a minute there.
Okay.
But I started proactively listening to voices who I thought I would disagree with. And I started with who I thought was Satan at the time, and that was Ben Shapiro. And I discovered
Ben's a good dude.
I know, like, he's so funny, right? Funny, and he's like so smart. I was like, wow, I don't agree with him on everything, because he's much more conservative than me. But I'm like, the libertarian stuff, I'm like, I agree with Ben Shapiro. Like, what is going on in the universe right now? And so that was kind of how I started listening, just different conservative voices, or even just people that I thought I would disagree with. And it all kind of culminated with me going to a Trump rally. So I live in New Hampshire. In New Hampshire, we're very blessed. I got to see all the major Democratic candidates in person at one point or another. And then Trump was coming about 20 minutes away from where I live. And I thought, well, this is the ultimate test, right? Is to go to the Trump rally and just see what's up. And when I told people that I was going to go to the Trump rally, on both sides, liberal and conservative, they were genuinely fearful for my safety. They were like, you're going to get harassed. Like, watch out. Like, you know, don't tell anyone you're a Democrat. And on the conservative side, they were like, watch out for Antifa, because they're going to come and wreck the place. And I was like, guys, I think it's going to be fine. And I went anyway, and just met all these different people who were just very nice, normal, everyday people. They were incredibly welcoming. I even did accidentally let it slip a couple times that I was a Democrat, and the reaction universally was, oh my gosh, welcome, good for you, we're not scary people. And so that was the experience I wrote about in the article, and just asking for people to relax and stop calling them racist and stop calling them white supremacists, because it's just not, it's not a productive use of energy.
Okay, well, wow, there's a lot of stuff to get into, right? There. So what I'd like to do actually is I'm interested in, so you said you've been a registered Democrat for 20 years, is that right?
Yep, up until last week. I'm now officially an independent.
Wow. Okay. So that in itself, there's a lot of questions, because so how did you, I'm almost thinking, like, I'm glad you've had this realization. I'm almost wondering, how did it take that long? How did you manage to even isolate yourself so much from all of these other ideas and voices and people? I mean, you said that you unfollowed a bunch of people who voted for Trump. So that means you must have been following them to begin with. Mm-hmm. Did you just not know their views, or were you not talking about this stuff? I'm kind of wondering how, you know, I don't want to avoid liberal people and liberal ideas, but I feel like even if I wanted to, right, I feel like it would be totally impossible, you know what I mean? Like, So I'm kind of wondering how you managed to isolate yourself from that for such a long time.
Well, I think prior to the 2016 election, it was purely that I really just didn't think Trump had a chance. And so I wasn't really worried about it. I was like, oh, whatever, they can say whatever they want to say. I have to plead just like, not necessarily ignorance, but I suppose distraction, because I was, when Trump was elected, I was in the midst of trying to build my own business. I work for myself. And so I was just focusing all my energy on building my business. I was writing a book, I was doing other things. And it was kind of like, I just wasn't paying attention. Okay. And I think, and I would just like have MSNBC on in the background at night while I was kind of doing other things. And so that's really how I think I avoided hearing a lot of these voices, is it just wasn't a priority for me at the time, but it became a priority when it started to infiltrate my hobby.
Okay. And what were your thoughts on, I guess, you know, conservatism and Republicans and the Republican Party? I guess even more importantly, the voter base. So we're talking a lot now in the Trump era, as people call it. But prior to that, I mean, in the earlier 2010s or in the 2000s, what were your thoughts on the Republican Party and the previous Republican presidents and candidates and everything like that? Did you have super strong feelings at that time, or was it really intensified with Trump?
I had very strong feelings starting when George W. Bush was in office, which is when I was in college, which is the time when you're supposed to have strong feelings about these things. And I think that's when it kind of solidified that I really saw myself as a Democrat, because the Republican Party, as I knew, were people that, you know, wanted to prevent gay people from getting married, wanted to censor like video games and music and things like that. And the Democrats were the ones that were like, no, we need to be welcoming. We need to be inclusive. We need to expand rights to people. We need to we respect free speech. And that was still my image of both the Democratic and the Republican Party until I started paying closer attention. And I realized that things have kind of completely flipped around, where now it's the Republican Party that's really very pro free speech, very pro liberty, and it's the Democratic Party that's trying to censor people.
And why do you think that has shifted? Because that's not even a US specific thing. This is something that has happened around the world. I have a whole bunch of theories on it myself. One of the big ones, which I don't really hear a lot of people talk about, is I think something that you just mentioned was one of the last legitimate fights, which was the fight for legal recognition of gay marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what I think is that there's a bunch of factors, but I think one of the big ones that people overlook is, I think that was the last legal thing that someone could make a decent argument that the law is not equally applying to all people in a truly equal sense. If people sort of gave a more libertarian type of argument, I actually think that that barrier would have fallen quite a lot earlier. That's just my own observation. But yeah, it seems like the moment when the left-wing parties and movements started just going off the rails and losing the plot really seemed after that final sort of barrier fell down. And it seems like for the past, I don't even know how long it is now, maybe six to, when did that pass? Maybe six to 8 years?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, it seems like they've been just a bit directionless and rudderless and have lost what they were. It's like all these years, right? If you go back any time in the past decade plus, there was always something. There was racial inequality. There was inequality between the sexes. There was inequality here. There was inequality there. Now, of course, there's still inequality in the world, as there always will be. But in terms of the law, it's really hard to argue that in the UK or in the USA, all adults are not treated equally under the law. There's just not, you know, if someone wants to tell me that, maybe I'm missing something, but I don't see it, certainly. And so, yeah, it seems since then they've lost the plot. I don't know what your thoughts are around that.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I feel like that was kind of like the last big civil rights battle to fight, and it was won. And I thought that was always the point. Like, we won. Gay marriage was legalized. Like, yay, everyone. And it's almost like, you know, my husband and I talk about this a lot because my husband's from Ukraine and he knows actually what it's like to live in a repressive society. Sure. And so he's like, these kids don't know how good they have it. They don't have anything to fight for. And so they're creating these problems. They want their own civil rights movement, even though it's really not necessary. And I even think, like, people tell me all the time, well, like, look what how Trump has treated women and look what they've done to women. And I'm like, I have lost no rights under Trump. Like, nothing has happened to me. I'm fine.
They say the same about gay people. They're like, he's done this to LGBT. I'm like, what's he done? As far as I know, he's the first president that's actually taken office supporting gay marriage.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, Barack Obama was opposed to it. Hillary Clinton was opposed to it until like 20, not that long ago at all.
No, until she wanted to get elected.
Yeah, people have really short-term memories on this stuff. So yeah, it's just weird. I mean, so tell me a little bit more about this knitting thing, because weirdly enough, I know nothing about knitting, but I saw that I saw something circulating online that one of the most popular knitting websites or social networks was banning people who expressed positive views about Trump or Republicans, and that they were banning any design that included Make America Great Again or anything pro-Trump. And I remember seeing that and being like, whoa, that is crazy. Like, this is not my community. I have nothing to do with this. But I was like, yo, that's like really messed up, you know? Like, that's just not a, that's oh, not yeah. on. So I can't, what's the name of the website?
It's called Ravelry. Yep.
Ravelry. Yes, that's the one. Yep. That's the one. So is this the same place that you started seeing this?
Kind of. Like, I was actually in support of the Ravelry ban at the time, and it was purely, again, I have to believe, I was not paying attention. I was okay. And I was just like, okay, yes, I'm in support of keeping all political conversations out of my knitting. But so yeah, they banned it. And I think that that actually added a lot of fuel to the fire in terms of what was going on within the community. Because we still see it. I see it mostly on Instagram. I'm told it happens on Ravelry. I just don't spend that much time there. But you know, anytime, you know, something comes out, like the most recent mobbing on Instagram was these two guys released this knitting book that was like knitting and dessert recipes. And they went on a show that was about weight loss to promote their book, as people do.
Oh gosh, I can see where this is going.
Oh yeah. It's like, not even a diet book. And like, I mean, hundreds of comments like, you're fat phobic. How dare you? How dare you? And like, it's a dessert book. Like, that's relax. Nuts. So this is still going on today. Yeah.
Wow. So how were you in the midst of this? And this is kind of a similar question, but slightly different. How were you in the midst of it? And you didn't notice how crazy it was getting.
Well, so when I started paying attention to is when Sock Matician and went into the hospital, and what I first heard, the first person that informed me what was going on, I heard he attacked a Black woman at a knitting festival, which is now, we know it's totally untrue. That never happened. But I was kind of like, well, if he attacked a woman, like, yes, I don't really have that much sympathy for him. He shouldn't be attacking people. But now we know that's completely not the case. He was totally set up and there was no physical attack. And then I kind of, he released this really long video blog. It was like 2 hours long, just telling his side of the story and presenting all this evidence. And that was when I first started speaking up, because I've got a little bit of like a big mouth. And I did my doctoral dissertation about workplace bullying. So I understand what bullying looks like. Sure. And I thought, you know, I don't make my money from knitting. They can't come after me. They can't do anything to me. And so all I did was I posted on Instagram just a picture that had a definition of the word bullying. Mm-hmm. And oh my God, that was when I first got drug into it. I was a racist. I was a Nazi. I was a homophobe. These things just for defining the word bullying and saying, cut it out. This is insane.
So you now know what half the world has been dealing with for the past like 15, 20 years.
Oh, dude. And since my article got released, it's like even worse. It's like, I can't even, like, the amount of nastiness that I've been getting, and like, I report it every time. And they're like, no, this is fine. I'm like, okay. Yeah.
It's so funny. It's I really enjoy having these conversations because it's weird. It's like there's this sort of matrix. Like I will talk to, you know, even some of my friends or some people I know who are, you know, more liberal or more left-leaning or whatever, and they just totally don't see the intolerance on that side, right? If I mention, you know, any racism or any type of intolerance or bigotry or bullying, like you just said, or abuse, right? People are always like, yeah, it's those nasty right-wingers, Trump supporters, da, da, da. And for literally over a decade, I've always thought the opposite. I see the stuff that gets sent to me, and less than 5% of it is from anyone on the right. Right? It's
right.
All, I'll go to the profile. It's all pronouns and bio, communist flags, rainbow flags, vote Bernie, you know, pro-labor, all this stuff, right? Every single time someone calls me like a racial epithet, or someone just, you know, says something really horrible to me. And sometimes it's not even on my political post. It's just generally. And even before that, it's just something I'd always sort of noticed myself. It's like, yeah, sure. Is there racism on the right side of the spectrum? no question. Yes. And in fact, yeah. the extremists on that side are less numerous, but probably more dangerous, if mm-hmm. that makes sense, right? I think that there
yeah, are, I agree.
I think the far right is a lot smaller than the far left, but mm-hmm. the far right, one, people don't tolerate it, right? Like normal conservatives do not tolerate the legitimate far right. But what seems to happen on the left side of the spectrum is that people are really bad at condemning their extremists on that side, you know? So people will make excuses for Antifa. Antifa will literally be on the street beating people up, bloodying people, hitting people with bike locks, smacking people with bats. And it's like, oh, well, they're fighting fascism. I'm like, what? Right? There's no conservative who's making excuses for what happened at Charlottesville, right? There's no one like, oh, well, you know, they meant well. It's like, no, everyone's like, yeah, those are not our guys. Disavow, mm-hmm. disavow, disavow. I also have a theory on that as well. I think it's because conservatives naturally, by definition, like borders.
I agree. They're like law and order people. They like to know what their boundaries are. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's just an interesting observation. So tell me a little bit more about what you experienced at this rally that you went to, and how did you feel? How did you feel going into it?
Oh, it was so fun. I mean, once I kind of got used to it and started talking to some of the people around me, I just kind of let go and had a really good time. And it was like a rock concert. I mean, it was insane. And again, like I've seen every major Democratic candidate. I've been to all the big Democratic events mm-hmm. in New Hampshire, and none of them felt like this. And I went to Barack Obama events in 2008 too.
Okay.
And they do not have the energy that Trump has at all. So it was just a very exciting thing to be a part of. And, you know, I got to see Don Jr. speak, and he was very authentic in his speech. And Trump was just obviously having a really good time because this was his first big thing after he'd been acquitted. And so it was just, it felt like a community. It felt like people who were supporting each other. And just like, and what I wrote about in my article is, you know, they don't like Trump because he is perfect. Mm-hmm. They know he's not perfect, and they do not agree with him about everything, but they feel like he has their back. Mm-hmm. And that's the most important thing.
Absolutely. I actually tweeted about this, where I was saying that one of the biggest strengths and advantages that Trump has, and I think the Republican Party has, is, I mean, I'm saying this as a Brit, right? I'm overseas, but they look way more patriotic, and they seem to like America and be cheerleaders for America way more than the Democratic side of the party, right? When I see the Democrats talk, they're always talking about, it's kind of the same thing with labor here, right? They're always talking about what's wrong with society, right? They're talking about America is built on colonialism and racism, and it's endemic to our society, and we're this and we're that. And I'm like, yeah, sure. Were there problems in the past? No question. But me personally, certainly as someone who's an optimist, that kind of message falls totally flat on me, right? I don't want to be with the doom and gloomers. I want to be with the people who are having fun and who are like, yeah, like go America, right? America's the best, right? You know, so whether or not, you know, people necessarily agree with that, that's what gets people going. That's what gets people amped up. So I think that, like you said, despite a lot of Trump's flaws, and, you know, his flaws are pretty obvious,
right?
You know, like they're pretty obvious. But one, they make him more human and more endearing, because he's not just that, you know, it can kind of go in two ways for people. I like it because he's not the typical politician, right? Mm-hmm. So that either sort of turns people on or it turns people off, because some people do like the very statesman-like, clean and well-polished, and but also kind of BS-y, you know, like you don't really
know
what they're saying. They're kind of shifting their positions depending on what people want to hear. With Trump, I'm like, look, even if you don't like what he's saying, at least he's telling you what he thinks. You're not there thinking, what does he really mean by that?
Right. And you know he's not going to, he can't keep a secret.
No.
Like I said to my husband, like so many times, I'm like, we know there's no aliens at Area 51, because like Trump wouldn't be able to hold that back. He would be so excited to tell people. And like, he's funny. Like
funny.
Trump is like a funny guy. And that's one of the things that really bothers me about the left, is like they have lost their entire sense of humor. And I even remember very early on in Trump's presidency, when I was still hating life and the fact that he was the president, I remember he made a joke at like one of his press conferences, and the press in the room were just like, They were angry about it. And then he just kind of like hung his head and he was like, oh, well, I guess no one got it. And I felt so bad for him. I was like, he's obviously making a joke, like, relax. Yeah. One of the people that I started listening to when I was first trying to break my echo chamber was Sargon of Akkad. Okay. And I was really following all of his like Brexit stuff. And he talked a lot about like this British character, like character culture and just being proud of being English and all this stuff. And when I listened to him talk about that, it really made me think the same thing about the US. Because when I was younger, I used to love studying US history. I used to love studying like the Revolutionary War and all that. And I remember I was so proud that I came from this culture and that the founders did what they did. And I think I had this realization when I was watching his Brexit content that, you know, I had lost that pride in the past several years, and I want to be proud of where I'm from because it's pretty awesome. It's the freest country in the world.
Yeah, it is. And I think that's a problem as well, because most Americans don't travel.
Right.
So I think that a large percentage of the population, not everybody, but a lot of people, I think the same in the UK, but people in the UK do tend to travel more because at least Europe is nearby. A lot of people lack perspective and gratitude, right? Mm-hmm. So when people are there talking about how, I laugh, same in the UK, when people start telling me about how terrible the UK is, I almost laugh in their faces because I'm like, what, compared to what? Like, honestly, right. what are you comparing to? Like, where else have you been that you can talk about how terrible the UK is or how terrible America is? And then, you know, even if you do get people like, oh, well, it's still not perfect. And I'm like, yes, I know it's not perfect. That's not what I'm saying. But from a historical level and from a global level, it's, you know, tell me where else you'd rather be. You know, maybe they might say like Sweden or Norway or something. And it's like, okay, well, you know, maybe there's like a tiny handful of countries that you may, like some individual may think are better for them. But generally, like it's pretty good. Really, really good. And I don't think people truly appreciate that.
Well, and I think I also heard you talk one time about, you know, growing up in, you know, Saudi Arabia and mm-hmm. like the goal, like what they're trying to create there is just like fundamentally different than what they're trying to create in the UK or what we're trying to create in the US. And, you know, I think having that perspective and seeing, you know, this is a good place to be. It's not perfect. It's always going to be a work in progress, but, you know, it's okay. You know, we're doing pretty well.
Yeah, definitely. So what actually happened inside the rally? What was it like? I've never been to one.
You know, I mean, it was just like, you know, well, you go to the rally and you have to get there very, very early because the line was like a mile away from the building. I got there an hour and a half before doors opened. It was still really long. Okay. And so you spend a lot of time just sitting around, but it really is, you know, it is like a festival atmosphere. It's like people are just really happy to be there and they're excited to see the president when he comes on stage. Oh my God. Like it is insane. Like people just, they love him so much. And they were just so, so excited. You could say, like everyone's getting up out of their chairs. I was sitting next to this older gentleman and he was just like, almost like tears coming down his eyes. He's so excited. And so it was just really, really a happy place to be.
That's cool. Well, he knows how to work a crowd. I mean, you got to remember he was in the World Wrestling Federation.
I know.
the guy knows how to work a crowd. Like you can't, he's got a really interesting set of skills.
Mm-hmm.
He's got, I know Scott Adams talks about this a lot, right? This, the skill stack, but
yes,
very true. Cause he's got elements of like a, obviously a businessman, but he's got elements of like a stand-up comic. He's got elements of, you know, almost a musician with a way that you can, you know, some people are like, oh, he's a terrible speaker. And I'm like, if you want someone who uses like really big words and, you know, sounds really smart when they talk, then yeah, that's not going to be your guy. But in terms of making people feel something and feel a part of something and laugh and the timing of it, you know, he really knows how to work a crowd. When you see him talk, I haven't seen it live, but when I watch videos, it's like, wow, this guy has them. He has them in his hand. And maybe as a rapper, I can really appreciate that because I can see when someone is really doing like crowd control and he really does it all the time.
Yeah. I mean, he knows exactly what he's doing. And I actually had this conversation with Brandon Strzok the other day. We were talking about how, you know, he's seen Trump speak for up to 3 hours at a time, just completely off the cuff, improvising it. And, you know, I'm a public speaker. I can't do that. It is very, very difficult to do that. And so I don't think people really give him enough respect for the things that he's just very, very gifted in some ways. Now, you can disagree with him on policy all you want,
sure.
But I think, you know, we need to look for these things to acknowledge about people. And I also think, I mean, he loves trolling. Like, my favorite Trump troll recently was like him tweeting that picture of his head photoshopped on Rocky Balboa's body.
That was quality.
And like, my entire Facebook feed of all my liberal friends was like, how dare he? And I was like,
oh, gosh.
Like, way to play right into his hand, guys. Yeah. Congratulations.
He knows exactly what he's doing. And my favorite one was when he put the Trump Tower on Greenland.
Yeah.
That was my favorite. That was my favorite. And the Thanos one, the I Am Inevitable one.
Yes, that was so amazing.
It's so effective, though, because it's like, you know, some people are like, the president shouldn't be doing this. It's not presidential, whatever. Maybe because I don't have a dog in the fight, right? Like, mm-hmm. Like, I want Trump to win again because I'm enjoying the show, you know? You know, like, I'm like sitting here from a distance and I'm just like, look, whoever wins is not really going to directly affect me, but I want another 4 years of this. This is brilliant. This is fun.
No, I totally agree. I've said to people, like, we are all going to go through like epic withdrawal when Trump leaves office, whenever that might be. And like, part of me, so I ended up voting for, I had to vote in the Democratic primary, yeah, sure, in New Hampshire, and I ended up voting for Pete Buttigieg. And part of my rationale for that is like, I kind of want the president to be a little bit boring, but at the same time, I'm like, I just like, I love this. This is amazing. Like, when, like, what a time to be alive.
Yeah. So obviously you're now in a position where quite rapidly you have discovered that conservatives and Republicans are not evil, which, yes, is great. So two questions, I guess. Firstly, how does that kind of feel? I mean, because that must be like a sort of rip in the matrix of a lot of your previous beliefs.
Well, it is, but it also isn't. And I mean, I've been preaching for years just in my work, and I write about this like a lot in my book. Like, you have to assume positive intent of people. You have to try to see the best in people. Mm. And I think these were lessons that I had forgotten in my own personal life for a while. And so it's actually a relief, if I'm honest. It's okay. A relief to know that, you know, most people are just fundamentally good people.
Sure. So we've talked a lot about like the experience and mm-hmm. the sort of personality. But what are your thoughts regarding actual policies, I guess, both from the Republican side and the Democrat side? Have you sort of shifted on those at all, or do you feel you're kind of where you've always been?
I feel like I'm where I've always been on things. I tell people, like, I didn't leave the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party left me. Mm. And I don't even know what their policy position is at this point. Their policy position seems to be impeach Trump and then impeach him again.
Trump.
And then, yeah.
Orange man bad.
Exactly. And that's it. Yeah. So I don't even know what they believe anymore. But on Trump's side, you know, listen, you can't argue with the economy. And it boggles my mind when people are like, well, that's Barack Obama's economy. Like, Trump's been president for 3 years.
Yeah.
It's time to start giving him some credit. Like, he very well could have tanked the thing. Unemployment is at an all-time low. And these are all good things.
These are Republican talking points.
Yeah, I know. I tweeted during the State of the Union, and then this was before my article kind of hit the fan. I said, yeah, you know, I really like that unemployment is low. And I have a lot of people who work in human resources, like, following me, because that's where I work. Oh, my God, they did not like that. And I'm like, you are human resource professionals. And then one woman who is like a recruiter for a company, she's like, well, having a job is the same thing as being a slave. And I was like, I really don't think it is. And so we had a little back and forth about that. And I'm like, listen, your job is literally to recruit people to jobs. Like, what are you, if a job is the same thing as being a slave, are you like in the slave trade? She didn't like that.
No, she wouldn't. So you published this article as we're recording this. It was just a week ago.
A week ago.
How has your life changed? How's that? Because a lot of people have seen that.
Yeah, I mean, in some respects, it's changed a lot. And in some respects, it hasn't changed at all. I mean, okay, I'm still, you know, I still have my business. I still have my job. I still, you know, do what I do. But I think that it has changed in that, you know, so many more people know me. now. I mean, just my platform has really, really rapidly expanded, and mm-hmm. and most of them are conservatives, which is you know a position I never thought I would be in my life. Mm-hmm. And I think you know I'm in a position now where I'm starting to feel the backlash from the left. Like I at any given moment in my Twitter inbox or my Instagram inbox, it's just hate.
And what are they saying? What are the most common sort of comments?
The ones I've been getting today. So I've stepped in it a lot in the past week. And the other thing I stepped in was I tweeted defending, I didn't really defend, but I tweeted commenting on the Caitlin Bennett thing mm-hmm. when she, you know, went on campus and then like this huge mob erupted. And I just sent a tweet saying like, I don't really care what you think of her. Like this is wrong. Yeah. And Twitter ended up featuring that in their Twitter story about it. And so I've been getting, okay. Oh yeah, I'm like massive hate from that. Like, how dare you defend her? I'm like, I'm not defending her. It's
for,
not the
for
point.
Saying that you shouldn't attack young women on campus.
Yeah, for saying that. And what boggles my mind about that is they're like, she deserves it. She had it's it coming. Crazy. And I'm like, you know, just like saying like a woman has it coming when she wears a sexy dress, right? Oh, they really didn't like it when I said that.
It's so weird. So many people are just blind to the hypocrisy. That's the thing I always find the weirdest. I mean, I don't know if you, this one was, I think this was earlier last year. So I don't know if you, did you see that video of the guy who kicked the woman, the pro-life woman?
I don't think so.
Okay. It went viral sometime. I think early last year, there was a woman who was like holding up a pro-life sign and was talking to a group of people. And there's a guy there who opposes her view. And he like roundhouse kicks. I think he claims he was trying to kick her phone. He kicks her like he just kicks this woman. And it's not just the fact that this happened. It's the fact that when the clip was going viral, you had all these people on the so-called pro-choice side of thing, right? You had all these liberals, all these, you know, shouting the guy out and saying like, yeah, this is what we need to do. And this guy's a king and all of this stuff. And I'm like, yo, can you imagine if like a conservative, any conservative roundhouse kicked a woman at like the Women's March or something because he disagreed with her view? Or just the other day, people have barely even heard about this. There was the guy who drove through the GOP tent.
Yeah. Right?
Like the media has been quiet on, I mean, invert that. Can you imagine if a conservative or a Republican or a Trump supporter drove his car through a Democrat voting registration tent? Like that would be everywhere. It's nuts.
Or even like the Project Veritas stuff too, with the people like in Bernie's campaign, like talking about how gulags are really not that bad and we should really make sure we're putting all the liberals in gulags.
Oh,
and like
gosh.
I was like, I told this to my husband and he was like, Carla, the gulags were pretty bad. I'm like, Victor, I know these people are insane.
Yeah, it's so weird. So I mean, it must be weird for you. What else are you getting called? Russian bot?
Russian bot. Asset. And I always make sure to correct people because my husband's from Ukraine.
Okay.
It's very important to him that people
Ukrainian
know
asset.
That.
Yeah.
Ukrainian asset. People think I've been a secret Republican for all this time. And it's funny because I've literally been sometimes every once in a while, like I showed them receipts from all the political donations I've made since during the Democratic campaign. I'm like, not true. I've been getting a lot of personal attacks lately, like people commenting on, you know, I'm white, so obviously I don't understand anything or like my weight or things like that. I got this, you know, lots of just like personal like nonsense. And it's also, I mean,
grifter, have you had that one yet?
Oh God, I get called a grifter the time. The thing that is really, and none of this really bothers me, like I don't really care, but they started coming after my business and you know, people who I like never spoken to, never worked with, started posting these horrible negative reviews on my business's Facebook page.
Oh,
I actually had to turn off reviews at one point.
That's not cool.
I was like, you know, come on guys, like this is ridiculous. All I did was write an article that said Trump supporters are not Nazis. Like get a grip.
Trump's not that bad.
Not that bad.
That's the weirdest thing. It is so strange. I'm really glad that more and more people are waking up to it because I've been talking about this for like a really long time and it's always been frustrating because I've always kind of felt like I'm seeing something that a lot of other people just are not seeing. And some of it is because, you know, I do spend a lot of time online. I've been on Twitter since 2009, so I've got like a pretty good sort of pulse on sort of what's going on and where things are going. I mean, here in the UK, in 2015, I was talking about how Trump had a good chance of winning. Mm-hmm. And people were looking at me like I was insane. Like people were laughing in my face because this is before he'd won the nomination. And I was like, I think you guys are really underestimating this guy because, you know, at the time I was following a lot of, you know, a lot of fairly prominent Trump supporters. I mean, like, you know, guys like, do you know Mike Cernovich?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, I mean, I've you know, been chatting with Mike online since way before he even got into politics. So, you know, him and, you know, a bunch of other people. And so this narrative that was being painted of, okay, like his only supporters are these sort of racist redneck hillbillies living out in the boonies or whatever. I was like, that is definitely not true. Right. And I was kind of thinking in 2016, I was like, yo, if these are the options, there's a good chance if I were American, I would vote for this guy. And I'm certainly not all these things that you're claiming his supporters are. And I was also sort of looking beneath the surface of all the headlines. And what's crazy with Trump is if you ask people specifically what he's done or said that they base their conclusions on, 90% of the time, they'll say something that's factually incorrect.
Right. Yeah.
That's the craziest thing, right? They'll say he called all Mexicans rapists. I'm like, no, he didn't. He didn't do that. They'll say he mocked a reporter's disability. No, he didn't. Right? No.
He mocked the reporter, but not because he was disabled.
Yes. Mm-hmm. They'll say he's running concentration camps along the border. No, he's not.
And
notice how quickly that narrative like disappeared. It was like if he was really doing that, people would still be up in arms about it. So there have been so many. He called white nationalists very fine people.
Yeah, no, he didn't. No,
he didn't. Watch the whole clip. He literally says, "I am not talking about the white nationalists and the white supremacists because they should be condemned totally." It's like you just watched the little clip, and that's the maddest thing. So half the time I'm talking to people about this, I'm like, I'm literally just trying to get the facts right. Or they say, "What's the other one? He banned all Muslims from the U.S."
No, he didn't.
You know,
or like ban transgender people from the military. No, we didn't. Yeah. He commissioned a study.
Yeah.
Like, that's what he did.
This is the thing. And it's weird because I'm like, look, there are plenty of legitimate criticisms or grievances people could have. But it's like, we've got to at least like agree on the facts. And then you can give your opinion. You know, I might think the tweets are funny. You may think they're not. I may think that policy is good. You may think it's bad, you know, whatever. So it's really weird because a lot of people now call me a Trump supporter. And I don't even specifically consider myself a Trump supporter, but I find myself defending him a lot. Mm-hmm. Because I'm very much a supporter of the truth. And if someone is just saying something that's patently false, I mean, that's not even partisan either. I mean, when, you know, like when the media did that little, I mean, they've done a lot of hit jobs on Bernie, but when they had that thing in the debate with between him and Elizabeth Warren, yes. I was like, yo, that was dirty. Like, that's not, I was like,
oh, I was so
cool.
Mad.
I was like, that's not cool. Like, I'm not a fan of either of these people, but that is not cool. Like if you've got a media, you can't do that, man.
Yeah, I was so mad about that. And listen, like for all the problems I have with Bernie, right? Yeah. He absolutely did not say that a woman could, I mean, come on. Like anyone who knows Bernie at all. And it was, I gotta tell you, like I had a couple of Warren campaign people show up at my house right after that. And I had like I took immense satisfaction in telling them off.
So but how did it feel when he said it?
but the other thing too is like you know, you look at impeachment, right? And okay. I was not necessarily against impeachment when it first kind of started, but then they totally bungled it and they didn't even charge him with a crime. And for all these people screaming and shouting about all these crimes Trump has committed and all this evidence, like, well, then what? Charge him with a crime. And like if it was really that simple, then it should have been that simple to make a much better case for impeachment than they did.
No, it's been a scam from the beginning because they from day one, before he even took office, they were trying to talk about how they could impeach him.
Right.
And they started with the whole Russian collusion thing. That went on for 2 years and suddenly that one went quiet. Right. That turned out to be a big nothing burger. Then it was Ukraine and you know, and even all the things like the you know, all the supposed sexual abuse allegations that have come up, right? You know, it's like, oh, like this one comes, and it just disappears. The way I have a general rule of how I can tell if something is bogus, which is if when it doesn't work, it just really quickly disappears.
Right.
Because it's like, look, if someone has been God forbid, raped or sexually assaulted or something, okay? And they've got an allegation towards somebody and it's legitimate, right? They're not going to just like, they're not going to like give it a shot and then, oh, it didn't work in the first week, so I'm just going to sort of quietly disappear. It's like, no, they're going to stay right on the case, right? If someone has committed a crime, you're not going to just be like, oh, okay, it didn't work and shrug it off. That's why with lots of these things, I'm like, well, that's bogus, because if it were real, you would be on the case. You wouldn't just give up. You'd stay on the case. Like, no, you know, this person committed this crime. This person did this thing.
Right.
But it just seems like they've had about, maybe in the past 3 years, they've had like sort of 10, like a dozen different things that they've sort of tried throwing and none of them have stuck. So I'm expecting that sometime in the next sort of 2 to 3 weeks, there's going to be something else is going to come up, and then later down the line, they'll probably save like a big one for, you know, closer to the election, and maybe they'll have some tape of something he said 25 years ago that's not very nice or something.
Right, right. But it's just, it's absurd. They cried wolf too many times at this point. And I think so many people are just tired of it. And people that are supporting Trump, they're not leaving him.
No,
like, it is not going to happen. And frankly, in the midst of all this like insanity, no one's really speaking to core issues. And I think, you know, they're really, and this was part of my article too, is, you know, the Democrats are so out of touch with what real people care about. Real people don't care about any of this nonsense. They don't follow it. They don't watch the news. They don't watch YouTube like you and I do. They just, they want to be able to take care of their families. They want to be able to pay their bills. And that's what they care about. And Trump is giving them that.
You mean the big fight isn't about non-binary haircuts and pronouns?
I don't think so, but you know, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think most people care.
Yeah, I saw you commenting on that story about how difficult it is for non-binary people. This was in the UK, taxpayer funded as well.
Yeah.
How difficult it is for non-binary people to get haircuts.
Oh, it was so stupid, because I had literally like the same haircut that the woman had in that video, which is like short and you have like the size of your head shape. I had that haircut for 3 years. I never once had someone ask my gender. And obviously, like, I'm not like a feminine woman. Like, I'm like, relax, stop creating problems where none exist.
Yeah. So in terms of where the US is right now, what are your thoughts on what do you personally feel are like the big issues that people really should be talking about, or which really do need to be dealt with or tackled? Which ones are you sort of feeling?
I think healthcare is something that people really do care about. And I mean, obviously, Obamacare was not perfect, but I think that, you know, there needs to be an additional iteration of that to make sure that people have coverage available to them, to make sure that healthcare is affordable. And this is really where I am. This is an issue I am on more of the liberal side of the spectrum.
Yeah, sure.
I'm not necessarily for Medicare for all. I'm not for wiping it all away, but I just don't understand how in the richest country in the world, we cannot provide healthcare for our citizens. It just doesn't make sense to me. So that's an issue I'd like to see tackled. And I also do think, you know, climate change is something that people are thinking about. I was actually just talking with a friend of mine the other day who, you know, he's a Trump voter from 2016, and he and I used to argue all the time back and forth. And we were talking on the phone the other day. He's like, Carlin, no, I get the whole climate change thing. I understand it. I get where jobs are going. So I think that's something people are thinking about. And I don't necessarily think people don't necessarily think it's the crisis that has been portrayed, but I think people are very much in favor of, you know, making small changes and kind of iterating towards a more sustainable thing.
Okay, cool. You know, the big problem with the climate change thing is that it's been too politicized.
Yeah, I agree.
That's the big problem. And it's like this weird binary split where it's become like a weird sort of cultish religion where you're not even supposed to ask any questions about the issue nor the solutions. It's either you're on board and you want the Green New Deal and you want to overthrow capitalism and do this and do that and have the government take power over everything, or you're a so-called climate denier, which is a really silly term because I don't know how you can deny the climate, but it's being used as a sort of Trojan horse for a lot of socialism, basically, right? So they'll say, okay, this is for climate change, so we want to do like A, B, C, and X, Y, and Z, and we want to just do all that. And it's like, oh wait, hang on, like, even if we agree on the potential issue, I'm not down with all of these solutions. Like, that's not the thing. But environmental issues in general, like, it's weird. They painted this fake dichotomy that people on, I don't like to use the terms the left and the right, but I'll use them for now. there's this idea that people on the left care about the environment and want it, you know, the planet to be nice, and those on the right want to chop down all the forests and pollute the rivers, and you know, and it's like, look, I'm not aware of anybody who's pro pollution. I know people who have different ideas on how much of climate change is just natural versus influenced by human activity, and then what sort of sacrifices need to be made. And a bigger thing with climate change as well is like, look, I mean, the US is a big country, but certainly from a UK and European perspective, it's like, look, I don't care what Iceland and Finland and Sweden and like all these titchy countries are doing regarding climate change, because it doesn't matter. What matters, you've got just in China and India, you've got like 2.5 billion people. It's like, look, if China, India, the USA, maybe Brazil, like if the massive countries are not playing ball, then it doesn't really matter what your nation of 3 million people does, because you know, it's a global thing. And China and India are still developing. So whatever proposed solution is there, you need to get them on board, because they're not going to be willing to sacrifice their economic growth for people in the West who are worried about climate change. Like, realistically, that's just not going to happen.
Yeah. And I think the Democratic candidates, they haven't even really talked about that much at all. Instead, they're focused on like, you know, should we ban plastic straws and stuff like that? Ridiculous. And listen, like, you know, I mean, come on, fine. I'll use a metal straw, like whatever, but that's not going to solve the problem.
No, it's so minor. It's so minor.
Yeah.
And also just the hysteria. I mean, do you guys have Extinction Rebellion in the US?
I'm not sure.
British thing? Okay. It's this like climate change movement. It's basically, it's borderline a cult now. It's like an activist movement. They're always in London, like blocking the streets and protesting.
Wow.
And yeah. It's crazy. It's crazy. And it's all around, you know, climate change. But they act like total lunatics. Like, I don't even know what they want, right? But they're really disruptive. They, you know, they're always just blocking roads. Sometimes they stop people getting on trains, which is bizarre, because those people are already using public transport. So protesting commuters on their way to work. There is a really funny video online where they pull the guy off a train. There's this guy on top of the train, and he's stopping all of these, like, there's hundreds of commuters trying to get on the train to get to work, and there's this guy like on top of it, like trying to give some sort of speech or whatever.
Wow.
And they grab his legs and pull him down. They pull him off the train. I was like, oh, holy crap.
These people, like, are insane.
It's pretty intense. Yeah, it's They're pretty insane. Intense.
And they probably don't even know what they want either. Like, they don't think that far ahead. Like, what is the end goal? Like, how does this all play out? What is the natural conclusion of all of this? And they don't think that far ahead. And it's just like, I so wish that these people would focus their energy on it and attention in a way that's going to be productive and useful and actually help people and make some sort of change. It's like in the knitting community, to, because it always comes back to knitting. Yep. There's a thing the other day where, one of the yarn dyers that they ended up mobbing, she came out with this SJW line of yarn where everything was like a different SJW bingo card name, like triggered or emotional labor. And so, of course, they came after her for that. But then, like, it was insanity. Funny. But then they had a meeting and they decided that in retaliation, they were going to do their own set of charity yarns with names like trans rights or human rights and things like that. And I was like, fine, brilliant. Go focus on your charity yarn collection, because at least then you're doing something productive and you're not bullying people in the process.
Right wing doesn't have any slogans. The funny thing about like a lot of those left wing slogans is they're statements that I've never heard anyone argue against.
Right.
I've never heard anybody. So people are like, we want people to recognize that women, you know, women's rights are human rights, trans rights are human rights. Like, who said otherwise? Love is love. It's like, yeah, we know it's on the tin, you know, like, climate change is real. Like, yeah, we know. Yeah. Again, even the people who, inverted commas, deny climate change still think it happens. They just think that it's just, you know, 99% to 100% natural causes. They don't think that human beings are having a big effect. Like, so I don't know. I've always found those slogans kind of amusing. Black Lives Matter. It's like, who said they don't?
I think it was like the trash protest in San Francisco when Scott, that cleanup that Scott Pressler was doing when they started protesting him. And I think it was either that or the walkaway event later that night, but the protesters started chanting like Black Lives Matter. And the other people were like, we agree. We agree.
That's so good. That's so good. Yeah. That's amazing. Actually. That's amazing. Yeah. It is really weird. Like these chants, it's just like, yeah, okay. I'm with it. Like, cool. What do you want from me?
We agree.
You know, I just want people to recognize that women are human beings. What do you think I think you are?
Right. Like, right. No, I feel totally oppressed by you in this conversation, Zuby.
That's awesome. So what is next for you? I know that you're at a really interesting place right now, of course, which I doubt you predicted. I'm assuming you didn't think you were going to get such a strong response to
I never thought that this was going to happen. And you know, I mean, I tell people like I almost didn't even write this article. And then it was like I sat down at my desk and I had it in my head and I could not focus on anything else until I just put it on paper just to get it out of my system. I wrote the whole thing in about 20 minutes, posted it on Medium, didn't think anything would come of it. And so this was not my life plan. to become overnight like a conservative darling and hated by the left at the same time.
Welcome to the dark side.
Well, I know, but what I've told people is like, I really don't think that this message came from me. I think it came through me because it was something that a lot of people needed to hear. And from that perspective, I don't really think I have much choice but to lean into this and continue to try to talk about how we need to be more civil to each other. We need to be more empathetic to each other. We need to stop, you know, all this insanity. And I don't know exactly what's going to come of it yet. I've got a couple of ideas, but I guess stay tuned and we'll see what happens.
That's awesome. And given that this year, 2020, is going to be a very heated year politically, it's going to keep amping up. I mean, what would be your message to Americans out there, you know, regardless of whether they're a Democrat or Republican or independent or whatever, what would be your message? Because I just think that the temperature needs to come down. The temperature is up way too high. And it has been for a couple of years now. We've had a similar thing in the UK with Brexit and with the recent election. But I think America, as always, does everything a little bit bigger than we do here in the UK. So what would be your message to people?
I think the message I would have for them is that I truly believe that I became a better person by listening to voices that I thought I disagreed with. I became a more understanding person. I became a more empathetic person. And probably most importantly of all, I released so much anger and resentment from my system when I really was able to look at people that disagreed with me and see them as just human beings. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the best things people can do is just start diversifying your news sources. Even if you don't think you agree, watch Fox News, watch, you know, Ben Shapiro, just see what they have to say and really, you know, take time to try to integrate more information, and it's going to make you a better person and it's going to make you a whole lot happier.
Yeah. I mean, I can imagine it being a big burden lifted off your shoulders to get confirmation that half of your country are not Nazis or white supremacists or racists, because they're not.
Yeah. And we're all in this together. We have to do it together. And we have one of two choices. Either we can start taking steps towards each other, or we can continue to take steps away. And, you know, I would like to take steps towards each other.
Awesome. Amen. Carlin, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been wonderful speaking to you. And I wish you all of the best in all of this. I hope that you manage to, not get dragged into the craziness too much and, you know, not have too many people coming at you too aggressively, but I really appreciate hearing your story. And I know, of course, what you're doing is resonating with a lot of people. So stay with it.
Thank you, Zuby. I appreciate it.
I am the man, sick with the slang, sick and I'm destined for fame. Do for the fam, not for the gram. Stunt me, you're destined for pain. I do not front, I do not scam. Put some respect on my name. Sick like Obain, click and I bang.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.